This is the Fearless Presentations Podcast, the fastest, easiest way to reduce public speaking fear.
Want to absolutely eliminate public speaking fear? This podcast is the answer. Here's the guy who literally wrote the book on Fearless Presentations, Doug Stannert.
Hello again, everybody. This is Doug Stannert with Fearless Presentations, with the Fearless Presentations podcast, and we're sponsored by fearlesspresentations.com. Hey, if you're listening to the podcast sometime around the time that we've actually recorded it, we're basically in the last few weeks of 2017, and so in the December months, you know, we've only got a couple more classes. So if you happen to be in Atlanta or Detroit, those are the last two classes that we have coming up this year for Fearless Presentations. However, in the new year, we've got a ton of classes coming up. So got Dallas and Washington, D.C. and Boston and Los Angeles and Kansas City, all those that are in January. So if you're in one of the major cities and you want to attend one of our two-day public speaking classes, make sure and go to fearlesspresentations.com and you can access information about what the class is, how it works, how do you register for it. All of that kind of stuff is on fearlesspresentations.com. So let's jump into this week's podcast. A couple of months ago, this podcast is going to be a little different than some of the other kind of podcasts that I've done in the past. It's a little bit more personal, and in fact, this whole podcast is going to be about how to write a eulogy, and so we'll spend a little bit of time doing that. And I'll kind of tell you why that became important for me. A couple of months ago, my father passed away. So you know, and even though I'm kind of the middle child, you know, I have an older sister and a younger brother. I'm the only sibling who is a professional speaker, so my brother and sister kind of turned to me to deliver the eulogy. And you know, being a professional speaker, you'd think that would be a pretty easy thing to do. But I was actually surprised at how challenging that it actually was. And so I figured if I'm a professional speaker and I'm having challenges with this, then this is probably something that a lot of other people are going to have a challenge with as well. So this podcast is really designed to kind of help you do that. Now, we also have a new tech find this week, which is really kind of cool. I actually found this tech find out by accident. It's one of those things that I was actually looking for something else and I found this and I was like, holy cow, that's actually kind of cool. So hopefully you'll get a big kick out of it. So let's go ahead and jump into this week's Tech Find.
Tech Find, high-tech gadgets to make your presentations better.
So the Tech Find this week is, it's actually a website. It's presentationmagazine.com, and you can find a link to it on the podcast notes, fearlesspresentations.com. If you just type in podcast, the latest podcast will come up. This is actually podcast number 22, so you can do a search. If you're listening to this sometime at a later date, just search for podcast number 22. You'll find a link to Presentation Magazine. And I'll tell you how I found this. It was actually an accident. I was actually looking for Presentations Magazine. It's a magazine that's been around for a long time. And it was Presentations Magazine was one of those magazines. It was a trade publication that was really well known and really well respected. And you know, what's funny is that the first time I came across Presentations Magazine was when I was writing the Fearless Presentations book and looking for content and making sure that what I was kind of teaching in the book or what I was using was kind of in line with what other professional speakers were kind of teaching as well. So I kind of used it as a resource. But even me being a professional speaker, I didn't really buy a subscription to Presentations Magazine. I guess nobody else did either, because apparently they're out of business now. Go figure that a trade publication that's designed specifically for professional speakers would go out of business, you know. What's kind of funny is that even when I was actually accessing the nice articles and stuff that were in that magazine, I was thinking, how in the world do they stay in business? And I guess that was a pretty tough thing to do, because when I searched for them when I kind of Googled the name Presentations Magazine, though, what came up was Presentation Magazine. So no S on it. It's a presentation singular, Presentation Magazine. No no dash or anything. But when that website came up, what was interesting was that it's basically chock full of things like PowerPoint slideshow templates and backgrounds for slideshows, you know, free backgrounds and stuff that you can insert into your PowerPoint slideshows and stuff like that. There's also a ton of articles about public speaking and tips in public speaking, and there's actually even a few tips on how to write a eulogy, which is what we're going to cover on today's podcast. So lots of neat things that you can kind of cover or that you can kind of access through that website. So like I said, it was one of those things that I kind of found by accident, but I'm going to spend a little bit of time kind of delving in a little bit more to it and see if I can find even more kind of nuggets that I can bring to you on a later podcast. But I would encourage you to go to Presentation Magazine, kind of start looking around, see if there are things on there that will help you be a better speaker as well.
Tech 5, high-tech gadgets to make your presentations better.
So, Doug, what's today's hot topic?
So let's jump into today's podcast. This podcast is really designed on how to create and deliver a eulogy. And like I kind of mentioned this in the intro that, you know, my dad passed away recently, And the whole deal with designing a eulogy for him was actually a lot tougher than what you might think. And I'll kind of tell you the story about what happened. But my dad was just a huge inspiration to me. When I started my company, I kind of used dad as a role model. Dad was an entrepreneur when I was growing up, and he actually ended up selling his company when I was a teenager and making some pretty good money on it. So it was one of those things that I kind of saw at an early age as something that I wanted to do at some time in my life, was to be my own boss and do like dad was. Dad had some freedom and that kind of thing. So when I started my own company, I got a lot of advice from him. He gave me a lot of kind of nuts and bolts on how to start my company and how to keep it organized and that kind of thing. So he was a really good influence for me, not only on my career, but on my personal life as well. What happened though was, I would say about a decade or so ago, it's been quite a while now, he was diagnosed with cancer, and he had a pretty serious form of cancer that was going to be really tough to beat. And he spent a couple of years going through chemotherapy and all the treatments and everything. And eventually he got to the point where he was in remission, and we were all praying for him and, you know, thanking God that he was going to be okay. And he was pretty fine for quite a while. A couple of years after that, though, maybe 3 or so years later, the cancer came back. You know, and they always say that you know, you never get cured of cancer; you just kind of go in remission. And there's a high chance that if you have cancer once, that it will likely come back. So this time, since this was now the second time that he was dealing with cancer, his oncologist sent him down to the MD Anderson Center down in Houston, which is a phenomenal, phenomenal cancer center. And he actually ended up spending about a year down there. I kind of drove him down and got him kind of organized. We got him an apartment there, and he and mom and actually my mom's sister, my Aunt May, ended up spending almost the better part of a year, about 9 months or so down at MD Anderson in Houston. And at the end of the 9 months, you know, even though he was still really weak, you know, the oncologist there was saying that he was back in remission again. So, you know, so basically he had a second lease on life now. So it was a really encouraging kind of thing. Eventually we ended up moving my mom and dad here close to where my wife and I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We moved them about 3 or 4 miles away from us so that we were a little closer, you know, because dad was still, even though he was in remission, he was still fairly weak, and it was going to take some time for him to get back on his feet. Well, 3 years later, he was still really weak, and he wasn't really getting better. And so we were worried. We had him going to all kinds of different specialists, and every time we'd go to a new specialist or a new oncologist, they would run the same test, and they would say, well, you know, he should be getting better. You know, something's not right. We just don't know what it is. And we finally, in the last few weeks of dad's life, we ended up finding a new oncologist. And it turns out that treatment that that had saved his life down at MD Anderson had actually caused a chain reaction that ended up deteriorating his bone marrow to where his body couldn't make new bone marrow. So basically what was happening was that he could if he went in and got a blood transfusion and he stayed on dialysis, which he had been on for about a year or so at that point, you know, he could live a pretty, you know, quote unquote normal life for maybe a few months, you know, at most 6 months, more likely, you know, two or three. And what the oncologist was saying was that eventually we'd get to the point where the transfusions just weren't going to be working anymore. So even though he might survive for another 3 months, the last month and a half, however long it was, you know, would probably be, you know, not very dignified. Yeah. You know, so, you know, Dad, since he was thinking very clearly, he had a decision to make. He was trying to decide, you know, whether, you know, he didn't want to leave Mom. You know, that was the thing. He didn't want to leave Mom by herself. And so it caused him a lot of kind of strife. And we all kind of sat down with him. We were all there. My brother and my sister were there. My mom was there. My aunt was there. My wife and the kids. We all kind of sat down with him. And he came to the conclusion that, you know, he didn't really want to live if he was going to deteriorate that fast. And he knew it was likely, you know, based on what he was experiencing, that he was likely going to deteriorate pretty quickly at that point. So he had a choice. He could either continue to go to dialysis and get the blood transfusions for another few weeks or maybe a month. But eventually he knew he was going to have to stop. So he just figured, I don't like doing dialysis anyway. You know, the dialysis going three times a week and spending, you know, I really, in all fairness, maybe 6 hours or so hooked up to a machine in a very uncomfortable position wasn't much fun either. So he just decided that, hey, if I know I'm going out, I'm going to kind of live it up for as long as I have. And since we were all there anyway, since the family was all already kind of here and spending time with him, we just decided that in that last the last week and a half or 2 weeks, we were going to kind of live it up. And so we just asked him, let's put a bucket list. What are all the different things that you've always wanted to do that you never actually got a chance to do? And I was telling him, hey, you know, most people don't get a chance to do this. Most people don't know when they're going to die. So it was actually, even though it was a really sad and emotional time, it was actually really happy and uplifting for us as well. So the inevitable did come, though. Dad did pass away, and the last 2 days were really tough. You know, those last 2 days were ones where he wasn't really conscious, and you know, we could tell that Dad wasn't really there, even though his body was still alive. So at that point, you know, we had to start making quite a few decisions. My mom and Dad are from Little Rock, Arkansas. I was actually born there as well, but I've been in Texas most of my life. And so since Dad passed here in Texas, you know, all the family is there in Arkansas. So we already had some challenges as, you know, to, you know, where are we going to have the funeral? I mean, our pastor is here, but, you know, in addition to that, he's got a pastor back in Little Rock that you know, in a church home back there as well. So we were doing a lot of organizing in, you know, in a very short period of time, maybe all total, maybe 4 or 5 days or so to get everything organized. And during the discussion, the inevitable question came up where everybody kind of looked at me and they said, oh, and I'm assuming you're going to do the eulogy. And at that point, it kind of hit me that, oh, I haven't even thought of it, you know, and I got, you know, I got to tell you, I since I speak a lot, you know, I'll speak professionally sometimes as many as 3, 4, 5 times a week. So speaking in front of a group is not really a big deal for me. I don't care who the group is. I can kind of do this stuff in my sleep. But from the time that my sister, my older sister, kind of turned to me and said, you're going to do the eulogy, right? All of a sudden, this knot kind of grew in my stomach, and I was feeling really uncomfortable all of a sudden. And I was thinking, why on earth was I uncomfortable? And the nearest thing I can think of is that most likely what I was experiencing was that, hey, if I screw this up, I'm going to be dishonoring Dad, you know, and I'm sure that probably goes through a lot of people's minds is that we're putting a whole lot of pressure on us, on ourselves to make sure that we have to say the right thing or say the perfect thing. And in reality, that sometimes that's really not the most important part. The one thing about funerals and eulogies that we always have to keep in mind, and this was the thing that really helped me out a lot, was that a funeral or a eulogy is for us. It's for the survivors. It's not for the person that's deceased, right? So once I kind of figured that out, I was thinking, okay, so how can I use this as an opportunity to help my mom deal with this sorrow, to help my sister deal with this sorrow, to help our other relatives deal with this sorrow? And once I kind of got the focus off of myself and about what I wanted to say and focus more about helping the other people that were there, my whole outlook kind of changed, and that knot in the pit of my stomach just kind of dissipated pretty quickly. So I know what when a lot of folks are kind of reading the title, they're like, okay, I just want the step-by-step process. How do you actually do this? And I promise you, I'm going to get there. I'm going to give you the real step-by-step process that I went through, but I'll kind of tell you the how I organized my thoughts, because again, this is something I've never done before. I've never actually given a eulogy. This is not one of those things that I had actually ever prepared for. And so when I started thinking about how exactly should I do this, my training kind of kicked in. And for those of you who've been listening to the podcast for a while, you notice that I kind of refer back to podcast 3 a lot. I mean, I'll refer back to that particular podcast a lot. And the reason why is because it's really how to design your speeches from scratch, how to design those presentations very quickly. And it can fit in a lot of different types or different styles of presentations. And so I'm going to refer back to that, but I'm going to show you some different alterations that you can make, especially if you're doing a eulogy. So when I started thinking about how to organize the eulogy or what I wanted to say, and when the focus was on helping the audience kind of move through that grief, I started thinking about what would be the best way to do that. And the first thing I started doing was I just started organizing thoughts about the way that Dad had influenced me in a very positive way. So I started thinking about those instances, those situations where Dad gave me advice, or Dad was there when I was having trouble, or when I was nervous, or when I was having a challenge, and what he did to kind of help me get through that. What was the inspiration that he provided me? And so I basically just kind of asked myself a question. You know, when I think about all of the different times in my life when Dad was my rock, you know, which ones are the ones that come to mind most quickly? And the very first one that popped in my head, you know, very quickly was when I was like, I think I was like 6 years old, and I stole some money. I stole some quarters from Dad's nightstand. And of course, he caught me. So it's actually a fairly humorous story. I've probably told it on one of the podcasts in the past. But basically, it was one of those life lessons. It was one of those things that kind of really stuck with me, and it taught me a lot about character. And it was one of those times that Dad was a real leader for me personally. And so that was kind of the first one that popped into my head. The second one was when I was getting married, you know, on my wedding day. And, you know, my wedding day was pretty much absolutely perfect. It was one of those things that everything just kind of clicked. But the closer that it got to that time period, the more nervous I got, you know, and Dad could tell I was anxious, I was nervous, you know. And so he had the ability to kind of see what people's emotions were and help them move through those emotions in a very effective way. And so he knew exactly what to say to kind of get me to realize that, hey, you know, this was an important day, but it's also, you know, one of the best decisions that I ever made. And that has been a fantastic decision from you know, my entire life. So basically he was there. He was my rock in that situation. And the third situation that kind of popped into my head, the third instance that popped into my head, was when I actually drove him down to MD Anderson. And when it was just he and I, when Mom and Aunt May were at a different part of the hospital, he kind of turned to me and he said, Doug, I don't know if I want to do this again. You know, he'd already been through all the chemo. He'd already been through all the treatments, and he knew what kind of challenges were in front of him. And I actually used some humor when I actually delivered that story in the eulogy. I actually used some humor because in all the times that Dad had given me fantastic things to say, you know, these great words of wisdom, the thing that popped in my head at that moment was well, Dad, you know, sometimes a man's got to do what a man's got to do, right? So it's like the only thing I could think of at the time was a stupid John Wayne quote, you know, which it made him laugh, you know. So it kind of reduced the tension a little bit and he kind of turned things around. So even though my words of wisdom weren't nearly as important as effective as his, it kind of still worked. So, but once I had those three instances, you know, and by the way, there was a flood of other stories that kind of popped in my head, but those were the three that kind of really stuck out. Those were those three kind of pivot points that I really recalled. And so all I did was, when I created the eulogy for Dad, is I kind of thought about those three instances and said, okay, what were the life lessons that I learned from those experiences? What were the things that happened to me as a result of those instances that caused me to be a better person, that caused me to see things differently, that caused me to, you know, be a better leader in my own family, in my own life. And I just kind of relayed the story that way. And it was actually really, really easy. So I told you I was going to give you some step-by-step tips. So these are the four step-by-step tips that you can use to design and deliver a really good eulogy. So the first thing that you want to do, step one, is you want to think about all of those instances in your life where this loved one influenced you in a very positive way. And the key thing here is to just brainstorm. Just kind of take a piece of paper and a pencil or a pen and just kind of jot down everything that pops into your head. What's most interesting is that typically the first few things that pop into your head are the things that are most notable for a reason. So once you have, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, 15, 20, 30 of these things, however many you want to kind of start with, go back and pick out the top, you know, three maybe, the two, three, four at the most, you know, but those top, the ones that really stand out as the things that were kind of monumental in your life. The things that were very, you know, maybe it was a situation where this person inspired you or caused you to change your way of thinking or something like that. And then once you've identified those specific instances, think about the life lesson. Step three is to think about the life lesson that each one of those instances taught you. And then finally, you just put those three or four instances together in a story format chronologically and just kind of relay that to the audience, basically to the folks that are at the funeral. And it should be fairly easy. I mean, it's one of those things where all you really will need to do is to kind of remember your instances, to remember your stories, and just kind of tell one after the other after the other. And most often what you're going to find is that once you get started, it'll actually come really easy for you. It's the first couple of seconds are going to be where it's going to be really, really nerve-wracking for you. But after you get into that first story, especially if, you know, some of that natural kind of self-deprecating humor tends to come out, which it does a lot when you're talking about your childhood stories and that kind of thing, that can make it a little bit easier. Now, keep in mind, this is not going to be an easy speech. Out of all the speeches that you'll give, this is one that's going to be more challenging than most, just because there's so much pressure on us when we do this. But keep in mind that the person who we're honoring is going to be honored just because you're speaking about him or her. You know, so it's not, you don't have to say the perfect thing. You don't have to say the right thing. And most of the time, even if, you know, God forbid something happens and we totally screw this up and we lose our emotion and that kind of thing, people are understandable. So don't put a lot of pressure on yourself. It will be challenging. It will be hard. It will be one of the harder speeches that you give, but it's one of those things where even though you're going to feel nervous, you probably just want to kind of feel the fear and do it anyway. You know, that's one of the key things to keep in mind. Going to be challenging. You'll get through it. And hopefully you'll have a positive experience to rely on that will help you help other people kind of move through their grief at that tough time. So hopefully this has been very helpful for you. If you have things that you want me to cover on a podcast, you have questions about public speaking or, you know, maybe being a professional speaker or how to design presentations or, you know, what happens when certain things occur, you know, answering questions, that kind of thing. Any of those kind of questions that you have, just shoot me an email podcasts@fearlesspresentations.com, and I'll try to include those on one of our future sessions. So thanks a lot for listening.
Subscribe to this podcast for new public speaking secrets each week.